So this guy goes into a bar with a duck on his head. Now, okay, this is all ad lib, and we got to talk about stuff. So this is the stuff we're going to talk about.
This is the unfurled world. My name is Tim. I am the guy next to me is my father, Michael Furtado. And we're going to talk a little bit here about some comic books and him growing up and collecting them and where we're at now with it and things to come. So why don't you tell me a little bit about where you started, when you started?
It all started in a barber shop. I was about 8 or 9 years old. They had funny books and everything else, but I saw a copy of Tales to Astonish, number 39. I guess it was around 1963 or so, 62, 63.
You were with your dad?
I opened it. Yeah, dad took me. I opened up that book, and inside was Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Steve Ditko, and Don Heck. And I became addicted, an addiction I've never been able to get over. The comic book addiction can be absolutely ingraining. And from there, I just sought more. And back in that day, it wasn't an easy thing to get a hold of. There was only one place where I could buy comic books. Getting back issues, that didn't even exist yet. But slowly it grew, and I was able to get many early Marvel Age comic books off of the rack.
What rack is this? Where is it?
One rack was in Middleboro. The other was in Brockton, both in Massachusetts.
Convenience stores?
One was a drugstore. Hmm. The drugstore was a place where I was capable of acquiring both Avengers number one, that was what, 1963, and Avengers number two, which I believe was 1964.
Interesting.
I have to look it up to be accurate with the dates. But anyway, also got number one X-Men off of the stands, number one Daredevil off of the stands, Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos, number one. A lot of early Spider-Man, a lot of early Fantastic Fours. Missed the original heyday of November 1961 of when Stan and Jack decided that they'd go ahead and try to do a comic book unlike any other comic book, portraying the heroes that would have relationships, problems, emotions, and just generally humanizing the whole thing, which was brilliant and, well, became what is known as Marvel Comics as we know it today.
So when would it turn into a collection, a true collection?
The collection has come and gone in various forms through the years, but the first collection really was through the 60s up until about 1967, when my interests would go more to music and the opposite sex. Mm-hmm. So the money would go there. Fortunately, I was able to work at a very young age at a very minimal return, but I did have a couple of pennies that I could buy comic books with. So that's where all the money
pennies.
Went.
Yeah, pennies. A couple comic
pennies.
Books.
Well,
a little piece of candy.
Comic book back then was 12 cents. So therefore, I could go ahead with a quarter.
Which
buy
is what a
two
week's
comic
pay.
Books. And there used to be penny candy that you get two pieces for a penny.
So bottom rack.
That's about how that would work. And it was one of the greatest times I ever had. I had a great childhood, a lot of it because of comic books. Anyway, the stuff was forgotten in a move in the attic, and somebody got themselves some really decent runs of both Amazing Spider-Man.
And they didn't end up in the trash.
Yeah, right. So hopefully somebody had the wherewithal to help them survive. And I didn't collect comic books for a while after that. Everything went into the music. Music equipment was pretty expensive, so all that went to music. And it started again in earnest in 1974 when I got out of college. And my brother had a copy of Fantastic Four. I think it was 147. And I saw Prince Namor riding the back of a sea serpent, taking on the Fantastic Four, and it started all over again.
The love.
Within a year, I'd be in business with a guy from the Boston area, and we ran a comic book shop in Quincy, Massachusetts, when we used to get comic books from a newsstand distributor. That would be those that would take care of magazines and newspapers and distribute them throughout the greater Boston area, both downtown and throughout the suburban towns as well. And we always tried to beat everybody and get the comics before anybody else could. There was no distributors back then. Things like Diamond, and I forget whom else there was at one time, but those came much later, I believe in the 80s.
So you'd have to seek out everything.
Yeah, I'd actually go. And
these are people from Marvel, from
they
DC.
Would come. They would get distributed from the printers, probably in New York, because that's where all the officers were, and you know, the artists, everybody worked. I think they used to work at Rockefeller Center. I'm not sure about those early days. I'd have to look that up.
You would have even, what, artists or writers come down and see you, even?
No, that would be later, when in the comic book shop in Quincy, Mass, just outside of Boston. Mm. But the comic books would be printed and sent off to these major distributors, and we'd go up there, or I would go, and try to get the comic books before they would distribute them or deliver them to the various people that would turn around and sell them.
Hmm.
Back in those days, I think it used to cost us around 15 to 17 cents an issue. And we sold 35 cents, I believe they were at that time.
Wow. Yeah. Same kind of thing on the rack?
Yeah.
Stands like that?
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
It would be the same. There wouldn't be any distinction. All of it was printed and long before UPS or anybody else would distribute. UPS,
now,
that's not right.
No. Well, so walking into your facility or store, would it be much like what when I would walk into a Coliseum of Comics? Not, of course, with all the games and such, but stuff on the wall.
Yes.
Key pieces up there.
Yeah, that's right. Pretty much the same.
Boxes.
The walls were often decorated with either posters or comic book related, or we were very fortunate to know a few artists that used to visit us from time to time. We had quite a bit of Gil Kane just sketching anatomy and working through various body parts, whether it was a hand, a leg, or anything, where he would just do exercises in creating angles and so forth.
Stuff that people sketches, love to see.
Before
3D modeling, and that's cool.
Material, because that was some pretty cool stuff. And Gil Kane was a wonderful man and took on an enormous amount of responsibility at Marvel through the late 60s and through all of the 70s. And really up and through the 80s. He was a terrific person. And
now your interaction with him would start at the comic book shop.
Yes. Yeah. He came to see us. He was living in New York at the time. And would just come into Quincy every once in a while. I got to remember, back in that day, there was only like one other comic book
store. Well, I was going to say, so he's going to find you guys.
Yeah.
Of course.
You know, so it was a much smaller community, and it was exclusively comic books.
Mm-hmm.
There was no other crossover. We didn't even sell, you know, any cards, trading cards, right, or anything like
the
that.
The game boards weren't
right
back.
There was nothing of that nature. It was just exclusively comic books or comic book-related original artwork and things of that nature.
Mm. Wow, that's really cool. That'd be interesting to come in and see that, and even just to be visited by just someone of that magnitude on a casual level,
mm-hmm,
and knowing him on a personal level and acquiring some very unique pieces by the relationship. Who would know that it would be so amazing later on in life to have that stuff? So you'd what would end up happening with the store later on?
Well, the story. Well, what happened is I decided to get married, and at that time, when I had the store prior to getting married, I was working in Boston at a restaurant in Dorchester, and I'd work there during the day and then go work at the comic store at night, and I was living on Cape Cod at the time, so a lot of times I'd end up sleeping in the back of the car instead of driving the extra 50, 60 minutes home to Cape Cod and driving back to Boston to go to work at 4 o'clock in the morning.
A couple hours later.
Yeah, get a couple hours if you were lucky. So a lot of times I just slept in the car in the back of the restaurant in Dorchester.
Mm.
Yeah, it's just down the street from the Wahlberg.
There'd be some cold nights.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Well,
anyway,
right.
So 1976, the guy who was I was in partnership just took over the business altogether, and I remained in a collecting mode and would later on start selling again. But it's always been a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's been a big part of my life since I was born, really.
Yeah.
So, you know, growing up, pretty well known as far as knowing all of the characters that'll come to pass now with the movies, and knowing and going even to the comic book shops with you, gee whiz, going and seeing you interact with these guys and work deals. That was a lot of fun to see. A lot of cool pieces now that are worth just an crazy amount of money now.
Yeah, it's really true. So much of this stuff, and it's really just come to pass. It's almost been overwhelming in the interest and being aware of some comic books that used to be in the dollar bin that are now worth $100 to $200.
Even rags being worth that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so crazy. Yeah, you pull out one and be like, check out, you know, I'm looking at the spine, and it's, you know, it's completely separated. And it's like, well, this is still worth this. And it's like, that's just unbelievable to me.
Yeah, there are some things that, you know, let's see. I saw an issue of Spider-Man number 2 that had the cover and the first two wraps gone that went for over $200 today.
And what's really neat to see is not only your generation still – or even being rekindled with all of the modern stuff that's happening with Marvel and really even DC. You know, more of the Marvel. Disney's doing a wonderful job with everything they're doing. But even seeing the young kids coming in, young guys my age even, coming in, enjoying it, even maybe even starting to collect. I mean, let's even, you know, I've been having so much fun just even was reading Walking Dead. I mean, you know, I hadn't opened a comic book for me to read since maybe Star Wars, I guess. And other than being involved with what you're doing, nothing that I collected until Walking Dead came in. And I know that's a little bit modern, but it was fun to go down to Coliseum and just trying to hunt out the best issue. Or they're holding it. And then, you know, a lot of that's come to pass. And we all know how amazing The Dead is. I mean, it's been incredible just to bounce around a little bit, but just
absolutely universal, worldwide mass appeal. Absolutely amazing. The people from every genre and every background. So many.
Well, look at the dead walks that they do. Everybody dressing up, going out for a dead walk.
I know.
Or even going to Universal. I mean, I'm so lucky to live down the road from them. And the amount of money that they put into these haunted houses for The Walking Dead, or even just the scare zones, which is just an area that you just walk through. It's not an actual haunted house for anyone that hasn't had the opportunity to go yet. But to recreate an entire, I would say season, because that's pretty much what they base it on, a season of episodes that's being aired on AMC. To recreate that walkthrough in a warehouse has been unbelievable. And the lines, Ryan and I, Ryan is another fellow that also a big comic book fan, my best friend and my best man at my wedding. I think we waited 3 or 4 hours to go.
That's phenomenal.
We got there.
You waited in a queue line?
In a queue line for 4 hours. I mean,
oh my god!
You know, you got to pee the whole time, and you're like, I'm not getting out of line. You can go if you want to. You go get a cup. You wait, and then you walk through. It's a 15-minute walk through. But it's,
man, I should have wore a diaper.
I'm telling you, it was terrible. Or don't drink anything, you know, because there's guys back there slamming them back because they've got the beer in the line and everything. So they're working you. Oh, yeah, man. And the people are leaving line and then there's
really, they're
arguing.
Concessions to selling beer to the people.
Of course.
That are in the
queue. Why not? Yeah, that's a perfect opportunity.
Clean it up, man.
That's right.
Incredible.
Get them hammered before they go through.
So you watched this evolve, though, with the Dead. I mean, how long ago? Let's see. First episode of the Dead was what? In 2010?
Yeah, that's probably about right. Okay. Right when Carly and I were getting married.
So,
something like that.
The Dead comes out with 6 episodes and it's a hit right away. We got to wait another whole season before they actually have a full season of, I believe it's 13 episodes.
What is so great about The Dead, and I'm going to go back to this, we'll jump back and forth, is the budget of which they worked in. So if you haven't seen any of the first season episodes, first 6. Go back and watch it. Look at the makeup. Look at how they did things. The practical props that they used. They didn't have what they have now. I mean, the budget is insane.
It's
right
huge
now.
Now.
It's insane.
Because of the response. I mean, they have so many viewers now. They can really
spend. Let's face it. We have a lot better shots of the actual Dead. But just look at even when they pan down, because they do all their shooting in Georgia. And when they're going down the highway, I had a buddy of mine that was driving through Georgia when they were shooting that first 6 episodes,
cool.
And they had the highway shut down, and they had all the cars everywhere.
That's really cool.
So they didn't have much. So you know, you go down to a salvage yard, you pick up as many cars as you can, you throw them out on the road. You're getting your shots now, and they didn't have much to work off of. I mean, they had a decent budget because they were in hopes. Because as we all know, I mean, zombies. Is there anything really cooler than that? I mean, I don't know if there's a cooler mass breakout than a zombie apocalypse. I mean, let's face it. You know, I got my AK ready for him. So you know, you can put all the stickers on him, everything.
We can thank George Romero so many years ago back in the '60s to set all this Night of the Living Dead.
That's right, and that's how all this has come to pass. And we know that this has been something that's wonderful. And now look how much more it is even today, and so much so that now we're going to not just see The Walking Dead, but now a whole other series that's going to come out in conjunction with it.
I know. I can imagine the first spinoff is yet, what, about a month away that we're going to be
crazy.
Watching.
And I can't wait till October. I'm dying.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I know.
It's been fantastic. And the way that they rebuild everything, I know that we were coming into this just for introduction, and we've gotten now spun off onto Walking Dead, but it just shows the magnitude of what we're trying to say as far as how wonderful – even the Avengers. I mean, speaking of Avengers, this Friday they came out. I mean, incredible.
It is.
Between the Avengers and Cap, I mean, has there even really been anything better than Winter Soldier? I mean, I don't know. To me, that has just been incredible.
You know what's really neat, too, is it was a great read. It was very masterfully done miniseries within the run of Captain America. And to see a transition to film and done so well is so gratifying, because back in the early days when they've tried to do any kind of Marvel movie, it was atrocious.
I can remember the early ones. You have them.
Captain America, oh, golly, it's just, you know, they did pretty good with the Hulk back in the 70s and so forth. But most of the stuff from Marvel, DC, they had it, you know. Even the Supermans that came out back in the 70s, and then Burton's Batman and treatments, they were brilliant. But as far as Marvel, they never had the budget. I mean, this place was going bankrupt left and year after year.
Yeah. And that even goes back to when you were collecting and how scary all that was.
Yeah.
It's been pretty amazing. So that's we'll be back to talk more about this. We're going to get into some key pieces. Dad's collected quite a few amazing things, some original artwork, a lot of just wonderful, wonderful pieces to discuss, talk about. You're going to find this, of course, on iTunes. Biggest thing you could do for us is go ahead and share it. Give us a comment. That's the biggest thing you can do to get the word out there that we're out here talking about this. Hopefully you've got some pretty cool things of your own, go ahead and throw them in the comments. Would love to see what you got. We'll get some. We'll get the website up. It'll be in the comments section. That way you can check us out, and we'll catch you on the next go around.
See you on the flip side.